Today on UFC Unfiltered, Matt is away with Dana. We have Alex Ponovic and Phoenix Carnevale. Of course, on the phone, we have Mike Perry and Greg Hardy. It's a really fun one. Without Matt, of course, we miss him.
Jaws are dropped throughout this arena. Nobody is sitting down.
Chasing that finish. Elbows raining down.
Oh! On the button!
Are you kidding me?
Oh, he hurt him again!
He's out!
This is UFC Unfiltered. And now, your hosts, Jim Norton and Matt Serra.
Well, Jim Norton part is right. Matt Serra is once again off. Phoenix, you're turning down the wrong one.
I am, aren't
I? You're turning down my head. I'm talking, and I feel like my brain is dying. Because all of a sudden, my volume is going down, and I see her hand. I'm like, oh, no, you're trying to turn your own down.
Oh, wait, yeah.
Alex Ponovic, thank you for coming in.
I got it.
Yeah, man.
And Phoenix Carnevale, of course, thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Matt's off with Dana looking for a fight, I guess.
Yes.
And they never tell us where they're going, but I know it's somewhere nice.
How long have they usually gone for?
You know, I guess until Sunday. We taped this on Wednesday, so they probably fly in today, get a little something done tonight. I don't know how long they should. I guess it depends on Dana's schedule.
Right.
I don't think Dana's waiting for Matt or Dean Thomas. You know, I think it's whatever Dana's schedule allows.
Yeah, sometimes they just do it for the weekend or whatever, but I guess they're doing a little, I don't know where they're going, so maybe it took a little longer to get there.
It's just a fun thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome, man. I love it.
You watch it?
Oh, yeah, I love it.
You know why I don't watch it?
Tell me.
Because I'm not in it.
Ah, that makes a lot of sense.
No, I love all those guys, and they're very funny together. Yeah. And they just go off and do fun shit.
Kind of hilarious.
So today on the show, we have Greg Hardy calling in shortly, and we also have Mike Perry, who has a tough fight with Cowboy Oliveira. Come in. When is that fight? Is that this Saturday?
Yeah, that's this weekend. That's on the main card.
Jacare against Hermanson.
Yep, that's the main event.
Yeah, I like with some people, they list their first names, and with some, they're like, I don't know, you know what I mean? It's almost like, instead of Nurmagomedov against McGregor, it's Khabib.
Right.
McGregor. And they do the same thing with Jacare. Instead of Souza, they'll say Jacare. Who else do they do that for? They just name the first name.
I mean, Cowboy Cerrone. I mean, yeah. It's just Cowboy usually.
Yeah.
That's
right.
True.
They don't say Cerrone.
No.
It just works by what's faster and what goes by and how hard your last name is to say.
Very true.
Yeah, Nurmagomedov is way too long on a poster.
Khabib
works. Let's just do that. Your name is hard.
Yeah, Khabib is a little bit easier. So, Alex, you're in town. We'll talk about what you're promoting,
sure.
too. Are you good friends with Jason Momoa? Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really good friends with Jay.
Just giant human beings.
Yeah.
Did you drink the breast milk of a giant?
Yeah.
Why
the breast milk of a giant.
I saw that.
No, we met like 10 years ago on a show called Stargate. And we joke around and tell the story of how it was my first day on set. He was the lead. I was like a guest on it. It was my first day. And there was a scene where he actually got a tattoo done while he was on holidays, so they were going, we need to figure out how to write this tattoo into the show. So I get cast as his best buddy from this planet that we're from, and I'm supposed to do that like tap ink thing on his arm. So we do the scene, and I say, as I tap it, he goes, and I go, stings, doesn't it? And then we go back to it. So we did like three takes, we got it. And then he goes, let's just do one more. And this is like 20 minutes into me knowing the guy. So as I'm tapping, he goes, and as I look up to go, stings, doesn't it? He slaps me across the face. And I always tell him, like, you didn't just slap me. Use the heel of your hand.
Oh,
I
like
saw stars right away.
You.
And he just then he went, stings, doesn't it? And I just froze. And there was a millisecond of, I don't care if I get fired. I'm going to smash this
guy.
And then the other Miller said, just finish the scene. And when we finished the scene, he just started dying laughing. I was in shock. From that time on, when we were done, he goes, what are you doing tonight? I go, I'm just heading home. And then we sat and we drank till 4 o'clock in the morning, listening to Tom Waits and just talking about life. And he became a bestie.
Wow, that's amazing, too, because did he know how well you can fight?
No, he just thought it would be funny for the show.
He's right. Did they use that take?
They did use that take.
That sucks if they didn't use that take.
There's actually a girl that's in our scene that did a spit take when that happened. So it worked out for everyone. But in that moment, I was like, I don't care if I ever work again.
That's great improv, though.
Yeah.
You know, those are where the magic moments happen.
Yeah, and he's literally one of the coolest dudes.
And good for you for staying in the scene.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I would have blown it. Ow, Jason! You know, I'm such a shit actor. I would have blown it in every way possible. But I guess you understood that he was doing something, whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, I don't think I would have gone that far in that specific moment, but he just saw how big I was and goes, this guy could take
it. He could take it.
And at the end result, we ended up having a really good time, good friendship. We just finished working together on another show, and I'm loving the way his star is just blasting, and he handles it really well. He does really great things for children, the community, the environment.
Is he married to Lisa Bonet?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you know Lisa?
I don't know
Lisa. You haven't met her?
No.
She still looks good.
Oh.
Yeah.
Looks great. And he's a little boy when he talks about her. He's just a little boy.
I guess it's got to be. I wonder what that's like to be so enthused about a relationship. I've never experienced that.
Oh, it's hilarious.
For more than a week.
It's hilarious how much he gets giddy.
I'm like that.
I literally, when we were hanging out at his house having drinks, and I was checking out his pad, and I was like, is that Lisa Bonet on top of your ceiling above your bed? And he goes, yeah, that's my wife. And I just started laughing. He goes, no, seriously, that's my wife.
Sorry to interrupt you. Do we have Greg Hardy on the phone?
You got him now.
Oh, hey, Greg, how you doing?
Oh, very well. How you doing, guys?
Good, buddy. You're talking to Jim Norton, Alex Ponovic, and, of course, Phoenix Carnevale. Matt is away shooting with Dana. But thank you for coming on the show.
No, thank you for having me, man.
And as a former football player, I got to ask you, too, do you feel like you're taking less punishment almost as a fighter than you do in the NFL because of all the practice hits and stuff you take in the NFL?
You know, I would say it's a different kind of punishment. You know, each has its own special way of destroying your body.
True.
I guess so. What made you stop playing football? I mean, did you just not get picked up again, or did you just get sick of doing it?
I mean, I had some opportunities come up, but by the time they came up, man, I'd worked so hard to get here, man, I fell in love with the sport. It's just I decided to go all in for the MMA path and align myself with UFC and put in work, you know?
Oh, so you were training while you played football?
Yeah. I've been training mixed martial arts for a long time. You know, I started just to work on my hands and my hips and stuff like that, and then it slowly progressed and, you know, things developed the way they developed, and I was out for a little bit and actually literally started training MMA full-time, you know, while I was actually still looking for a team to play for.
Hey, Greg, this is Alex Ponovic. It's really interesting because it's not like you just played in the NFL. You were a pro bowler. You played for Cowboys. Like, you were an elite-level athlete there. So to go, like, it's almost a step down, like starting from the minors when you're starting a new sport, to jump into something like that, it's kind of mind-boggling, especially the money that you get paid as an NFLer.
Yes, sir. And, you know, it's funny that you say that. It's a point that I like to make. I would like to want people to understand. You know, for me, it really wasn't about the money. You know, I started off actually paying to my amateur fights, paying to go fight. So it was about, you know, earning my way in and actually developing myself. You know, when you become an elite athlete on any level, an elite businessman or elite anything, it's just honestly about the competing. It's about being at the highest level that you can, and it's about being a competitor, man. And I'm sure you guys understand, you know, because you guys have a prestigious show and you guys all have your individual careers that are so very prestigious, man. And it's honestly just about gaining and becoming the best. And that's what I wanted to do in this sport.
I think it's super cool. Just not only that, you go from a team sport to somewhat we call MMA an individualized sport, even though you're working with a team in order to get you in the octagon in the first place. How do you find that transference, right, from working with people that you have to rely on them to catch the ball, to do plays, to then being by yourself in there in those moments?
It was actually a great transition for me, man. It played into my hand wonderfully because, you know, every great athlete, every good athlete knows you got to have those Kobe moments just to excel in sports, man. You know, the team moments are all great. They're all good. And, you know, everybody gets the credit. Everybody gets the work and sharing the blame. But at the end of the day, man, a lot of the times it's just you on that field at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's just you running through those bags. It was just me a lot of the times. And now I get to apply those actual techniques all the time. It's me who gets to decide when to go to workouts, if I'm going to go to workouts. Nobody's up there telling me, hey, you got to go to practice. So it's just perfect for me, I feel like. It was a great transition.
And Greg, you made your debut in Brooklyn in January against Alan Crowder. And everyone knows it ended in a disqualification because of the knee. And there's a lot of speculation as to your mindset when that happened. There were people suggesting that you were getting tired and you were just looking for a way out, which I didn't necessarily agree with that. Can you just talk about your mindset in that moment?
Oh, man, it was a very tired mindset. You know, And it took me a second. I wouldn't say it took me very long, but it took me a second to put down my pride, because that's what you got to do to get better, of course, and say that I was tired, you know, and realize that you trained as hard as you could, and you didn't get to where you wanted to get to. And that's honestly what happened. And it was not a way out mentality, because, you know, anybody that's watching the fight that has any kind of educated mind watching the fights, you know, I had plenty of chances to, you know, tap out. You know, I could have just tapped out in the guillotine and nobody would have said anything. That would have been like, hey, a rookie just got guillotined. That makes sense. Or he had me in a crucifix, you know, like, you know, that's the perfect time to say, hey, I can give up right here and nobody would have questioned it. You know, and these are things that went through my mind, man. And I haven't thought about them in a long time just because I've been such at a high level. But just honestly, I was so exhausted. I was making decisions and I couldn't see the whole picture, you know, and that's what happens when you're tired.
Yeah.
You start making decisions and not processing every single detail you would like in the first round.
That also comes with ring generalship too, you know. It's, I mean, that's a term we use in boxing a lot, but octagon generalship, we could say. And I think, you know, that I think a lot of people, you elevated so quickly to such a high level so quickly because of your experience. But Dean Thomas, who's amazing and a very good friend of ours here on the show, actually took a lot of the blame in that criticism, and he gave you a lot of props. So what are your thoughts on what Dean Thomas said and just working with him in general?
I appreciate what he said, man, you know, and I'm going to have to disagree, you know, because he's one of the first guys that said I needed more ring time. Mm-hmm. And though a lot of people don't give me a lot of credit for what you just said yourself, I'm just elevating so fast.
Yeah.
That it's more amazing than it is disappointing, but that's not the crowd, that's not the venue, that's not the stuff that we have, you know. And having somebody like Dean in your corner allows you to just see so many things so fast and be able to deal with so many things so fast without that actual ring time.
Yeah.
And then just when I got in there and lost all that, like I think people forget, you know, when you're in a high pressure situation, you stop listening to your coaches. Like it just goes away. It's like there's not a choice. You don't actually turn it off. It just goes away. So, and when you don't have that kind of guy in your ear, when you can't put the focus on the right things, man, you know, things go down the drain. And
well, it's confusing.
Like I said, he trained me perfectly.
It's confusing too, because you have the unified rules and then you have rules per state. I mean, I think that, I don't know if that was a issue that happened with John Jones. I think the thing with John Jones was like a timing issue where he wasn't sure if the hand was down and then the hand was down. So it gets a little muddied and confusing even for us in the media.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a split second decision.
Yeah.
You know, people, you have minutes and hours to look at the fight and think it over. Like, John had a second to make that decision and then it was gone. So
right.
I think, man, like I said, I don't blame Dean at all. I don't think he should take the blame at all. You know, it was me. He trained me, like I said, perfectly. And it's just something that I have worked on and that I can have to continue to work on, man. I gotta get better at that. And I think that I will. And I think I hope. That, you know, the professionals in the sport know that that's not something that a person like me and a person that has been trained by Dean Thomas would do purposefully.
Yeah, you weren't fighting dirty. It was just in the heat of battle, and you just did something. When you were going out there, it was a co-main event, your first shot in the UFC. Are you feeling more pressure than you thought you would? Obviously, you've been in high pressure situations, but like you said, this is no longer a team sport. This is just you. So when you're walking out there, how is it feeling in this first UFC fight?
I felt amazing, man, you know, and it felt really good just to be there, to be back. But honestly, if you get down to it, man, there was just so much emotion around it. You know, it was a lot of people overlooked this, too. It was my comeback. You know, this is the first time I've been in front of an audience. I've been in front of a crowd
right.
And allowed to perform, allowed to compete and do what I love and do and be what I am in years. So, you know, that was a part of the hype. And then just actually getting to the second round was a whole nother level of hype. Oh man, just the crowd. I mean, all of it was just a whole nother level of hype, man. And I didn't, again, my coaches told me, but I didn't account for any of that zapping my energy, zapping my mind, you know, my mind speed process, the way that I process and at the speed that I process, man. And it hit me hard, you know? So I wouldn't say that it was nerves or anything else. It was just all that hit me at once. And I had to process it in the middle of a cage naked. Fighting a grown man.
Yeah, like if they tested your heart rate, especially if it's like kind of your first time doing in such
That's
a
right.
big event, and you know, because we've all been on stage and right. stuff, your heart rate is elevated just walking to the cage, right. like you're doing cardio.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, your adrenaline is up there, like just walking out there.
And even though you've done that walk before, when it's at such a level and you've actually had your brain in that kind of level of like, this is it, it gives it a different molecular structure.
For sure.
Like, this feels like different than the last time it felt. And then it just kind of builds on that. So it's a really interesting thing. And again, it's no joke because you're a professional athlete who at the elite level of the NFL with thousands of people screaming for your team. And then then you do something like this and how different it could be. So it's a testament to anybody who just walks out there.
Yeah, Greg, do you do anything like now that you're in a different sport? Do you do any of that type of mind training or breathing or sort of to relax your adrenaline or anything like that?
I do a lot of it. It's continued through football, and I think that's what's honestly got me through football at such a high level. It was more of a mental game. It was more of a compressed situation. I was always on top of it, and I continued that when I moved the transition to the sport. And something that a lot of people don't know about me, I've exercise-induced asthma, so breathing's a big part of my game.
Oh, shit. Me too.
So, yeah.
And you had...
Sorry,
go ahead.
No, please, come again.
No, I was just saying, you had X amount of wins. I think it was 6 wins in a row, all first-round knockouts, TKOs. Are you working on the ground game? Because that's something that you get to the UFC and a lot of guys have a tremendous ground game. So have you been working on the jiu-jitsu or what have you been doing with that?
I've been doing everything, man. I came back to ATT with a mindset of bring it off. You know, we were real sheltered the last camp. We were focused on just the defenses and making sure I had enough answers to compete just because it was so fast. And this time, I think the difference is, man, we came back and I got thrown in there. You know, I threw myself in there. I went to war. I got on the ground. And I put myself at the mercy of, you know, Steve Mako, my jiu-jitsu coach, Devin, and just Daniel Jolly, Billy Patton. We ran it into the ground, man, to the point where I had to push it and be in that same position that I was in the fight.
Well, I guess that just brings us to Dimitri and his freestyle wrestling pedigree and you know, winning his last 8 fights by either KO or submission. And I'm wondering how much particular wrestling and takedown defense have you been working? I know that Dean is phenomenal at this, especially working with somebody like Tyron Woodley and having that Damian Maia fight. So that takedown defense is just run through that camp, you know, quite often. But I'm wondering, like, if how confident are you feeling with your wrestling and how much have you established that for this particular camp?
You know, I feel very comfortable. And I think I don't want to reach for the credit, but I don't think I get enough credit for, you know, just the sheer fact that I was able to get up off the ground when nobody thought I could.
Right.
Especially out of the positions that I put myself in, of course. And I don't think I've ever been worried. You know, I've been trained by the best. I've been trained very well. And I think I would even go as far as to say I was more calm on the ground that fight than I was standing up. So, I mean, being comfortable was not the problem. I think it was more of a conditioning situation and what came from me being down there. And I think we remedied that situation.
What motivated you to even take? Because a lot of guys your size, you're a big dude, you're an athletic guy. You don't even need, a lot of guys don't even need to train to fight in real life. What made you decide that you want to learn how to do it? Were you fighting a lot growing up as a kid, or what made you want to take MMA?
I'm a real peaceful guy, man. I've been in 2 fights my whole life.
But, another advantage to being a big guy. Nobody fucks with you.
No, sir. but, you know, I enjoy the level of competition in MMA, man. And then after that, I enjoy the level of camaraderie and just respect that you have for what you do. You know, that's a big thing for me because, like I said, I never approached a situation. If you want some more Greg Hardy facts, I played in the SEC, man, as a defensive end. I played as a wide receiver. I've caught 6-7 touchdowns in the SEC. I played on the on Ole Miss's basketball team, my friends. You know, I've been at that high level for so long that what am I trying to say? It's kind of just in me, you know.
I was just going to jump in and just say, like, was there one specific fight or one moment where you're like, oh, my God, I got to figure out what that is and do it?
No, man. I started watching and just with curiosity, Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre, man. And like I said, it just everything that I saw was in me. You know, this is, I've been competing so long at a high level. I have such a respect for athleticism and what it takes to actually be and compete at a high level that when I saw it, man, it was just, you had to be proud. I was kind of proud of it, proud to watch it and proud to see it develop. And when it started to develop into this like beautiful sport, man, I had to do it, you know, like, and I honestly did. I was picking between going and play some overseas basketball, MMA, and a couple other ventures. And, you know, it turned out to be an easy decision, man. It's just a beautiful sport.
I can hear the birds in the background. You're talking about being peaceful. Yeah. I'm like, this is, I think you put me in a trance.
I wanted to ask you, too, is it hard? And I know you're training on the ground with Dean at that camp, but is it a little harder? Because even guys that are like, you know, Roy Nelson was a jiu-jitsu black belt.
Yeah.
And once you get that feeling of knocking people out, he just kind of went to that booming overhand right and very rarely used this jiu-jitsu that he was so great with. Is it harder to motivate yourself to train on the ground when you have felt time and time again how fast you can knock somebody out if you connect?
That was my problem before last fight. After last fight, and being as tired as I was and just seeing how it decimated my cardiovascular system, I had never had that problem. I've never had that problem since.
So it was basically, it was a little bit jarring to when you, with a heavyweight in the UFC level who puts you on the ground and you're like, oh, okay, there's a little bit of work that needs right. to be done here.
Yeah, you know, and I went back to my strike and I tried to corral him on a cage. He took me down. I got back up and tried to corral him again. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, oh man, it's gone. Where did it go?
Yeah.
You know, and just experiencing that is kind of shell-shocking.
Well, did you see, I'm sure you watched Miocic against Ngannou when they fought. And you know, I mean, Francis was knocking everybody out. And then you get a guy like Stipe, who's not as big, but a very strong guy and a really smart wrestler. Just keep him up the cage and watch that energy bar drain. So you definitely want to be able to do something on the ground, because that's what a guy like Stipe would do to you all day if he could.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, this, I'll say this for the MMA community in the world. There is no comparison to experiencing being on the ground and getting back up and having to fight a grown man, man.
Yeah.
You can talk about it all you want. Right. I watched that whole fight, and it was just shocking to me that a high-level athlete getting paid that much money did not work on his ground game. But, like, once I was down there...
yeah.
You made a mental note.
Yeah. It's something totally different.
Yeah.
Well, you're the co-main event again, is it correct? Right. And how do you say Dmitry's last name? I know I'm... Smolyakov?
Smolyakov.
Smolyakov. Okay, I got it right. You're the co-main again. UFC has a lot of faith... I guess also because you were so well-known from ESPN for playing football. But they obviously see a lot of potential in you... as a fighter to have longevity. So that's got to make you feel confident that the UFC has such faith in you.
Yes, sir. You know, and I appreciate it. That's something that's happened in football as well. And I love when that happens, when people have faith in me and they enjoy the way that I entertain. And it gives me the opportunity to come out there and enjoy what I do, man. And I would like to say that my last fight was entertaining, you know.
It was.
And the fans loved it, you know, and that's what I want to keep bringing. And when, you know, you have a company and an organization and a boss that believes in you, you get to come out and produce that every time. You know, you don't have to really worry about if they believe, what do you got to do to survive or anything like this, that, or the other, you know. So I love it.
And you also got the first loss out of the way. And our producer noted in the notes here, the same way Jones loss was a disqualification. So, it's like you don't have the pressure now of wondering what it's going to feel like after your first loss. Did it change you at all mentally after you actually had a loss after having won six straight?
No, sir, not at all, man. I took some of the biggest losses of my life recently, you know, the last decade and a half. Mm-hmm. After winning for a decade, I'm not that old. And then I just, you know, it's part of being a champion. You know, what I gained more from it than I could ever lose. And I feel like what I gained was the ability to see what I needed to fix.
Yeah.
The ability to see what's ahead, you know, and that's a dangerous thing to give a person like me. And I mean, I'm just excited, you know, to get to it.
All right, so talking about what's ahead, do you have a prediction for this fight?
Do I have a prediction for
this
fight?
You can't say pain. You cannot use the Mr. T prediction. You got to get
us. True. That's all I'm saying. Even if it's true, I'm saying.
Okay, all right.
I mean, listen, I've never had a fight where somebody didn't get knocked out. You know, you can say I lost all you want, but somebody's going down.
Yeah.
But hopefully this time, no DQs. I'm just in a mindset. This is another thing that I gained from this last fight. I'm in a mindset where, man, I'm here to be a fighter. I'm not like as much as the fans want to see a knockout and a quick TKO. I'm here to entertain. I'm here to be a fighter. You know, I'm training with literally the best in the world. So
yeah,
imagine as a 265-pound John Jones. And please don't take that as me comparing myself to a Titan. But
right. You
know, it's just beautiful to watch a man fight. So I think that's what's on my mind set for this fight. I'm here to fight. If it goes 15, please enjoy, because I'm gonna have the time of my life, and he's gonna be in pain.
Greg, before we let you go, I just want to ask you this. So there's definitely a difference between, you know, a fighter and a martial artist. It's a great time for MMA because now fighters are also athletes, high-level athletes like yourself. Do you take any of the martial arts principles into your life now? Or do you feel that it's just fighting is your route and martial arts is just a tool?
It started off for me just fighting, but, you know, as I got into it, in the very beginning, as I got into it, I decided to just take it and kind of change my life around, man. And I used the martial way to turn my life around and kind of just settle some demons inside of me and get on the right path just to be able to survive in this world, you know, and to be humble enough to take the losses in this world. So it's helped me a lot, man, and I love it.
Greg,
I don't think I would want to exist without it.
So dope. I'm so happy to hear you say that. It's really awesome.
Yeah, thanks for calling, man. We wish you luck in the co-main event. This Saturday, where is this fight taking place?
It's in Fort Lauderdale.
In Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Good luck, Greg, and I'm sure we'll see you fight many more
times. Good luck, buddy.
Bye, Greg.
Thank you guys for having me. Have a good day.
All right, man. Take care. You too.
Bliss.
Bliss.
Yeah,
he's
a nice guy.
Yeah, that's good.
That's
yeah.
A lot of pressure, your first fight, co-main. But he was honest about the ground. It's nice to hear you. I got tired.
Yeah.
You realize on the ground, like, there was a lot of work to be done. Yeah, it's just something, even guys who are fighting in other organizations come to the UFC and notice that the level of fighting is just higher here.
It's really interesting, especially when the Pride guys started coming over. Mm-hmm. You could really tell of like how it, like when Krokop first came in, he was supposed to take on the world. And then when you get in that octagon, it's a different feeling.
The Gonzaga fight IQ dropped is him. Higher.
That was a shock to me. I mean, because Gonzaga was not as known as Mirko Krokop.
The fight IQ is higher. The level of athleticism, especially now with the Performance Institute, is higher. It's like going from, you know, high school to your doctorate, like to going to like your master's degree. It's
or triple A to the major leagues.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that no one really thought that way, especially coming from Pride. They just went, Pride, we've got the best fighters. Then they did have the best fighters
at the time,
Pride.
For sure.
But it was when they made this transition into a different kind of arena with the octagon and the pressures of the television, and it just, I think it was a surprise to everybody more than it was this is the step up.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And you're working on something now too. You're $1 million short.
Yeah.
How long is it?
30 minutes.
I saw the trailer. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Started
out as a 47-minuter. And then we were just going, we got to cut this down.
Was it budget-wise or the story just didn't...
No, the story... Well, it was mostly the festival circuit, because if you're in a short film festival or in that category, you know, that festival's going, well, we got to turn down 4 films just to get your 47-minute film in there. So usually they'll turn down our film so they can get 4 other...
Sure.
So we were just trying to take that away from it and make the script, make the story a little tighter, and it became really great. Bobby Ballard wrote a great script for his daughter, and I was lucky enough to get the lead and play in it, and it was interesting because, you know, I think we had a 21-day shoot, which is not for a short film, and the costumes and the makeup, and he really went for it, man. And
what's it about?
Well, it's basically it's
called The Shipment.
Yeah, it's called The Shipment, and it's a broken down ship that I have. My wife has passed away. I'm a single dad. And my daughter is on this ship with me, and it's breaking down, and I transport slaves from one planet to another, and I promised my wife that I wouldn't do that anymore. So this was the last shipment, so I'm going in to, you know, take a look at the ship that's broken down, but it's going to cost a lot of money, and then I get one more offer. And that's where it kind of all goes sideways.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
But it's a poignant piece, especially in this day and age with, you know, kicking people out and seeing who can come in. So it didn't really feel like that at the time, because we shot this thing like almost 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So it was before the Trump era.
Yeah.
And then, and so with all, you know, with independent film, with all the times that it took for, you know, gathering the money and finishing the post, and it kind of sat into this pocket to where, you know, we're really kind of seeing what's going on.
Wait, it took them 4 years to finish post-production, or they sat it for, they shelved
it
for a reason?
It took this long, yeah. Took this long.
Was he doing other projects? Oh, sorry.
It was basically when you're dealing with an independent company and the money, like it was all his money. So it was, the money wasn't prevalent.
Right.
And it was who can work for a certain amount of money. And then we were going all over the world with it. And we ended up just getting a phenomenal team. Like one, this guy, Crispin Hands, who's a composer, he did the score. And I remember, Bobby going, hey, so we're doing the score at Bryan Adams Studio in Vancouver. I went, oh, okay, great. So you think you're going to walk in with a guy with a synthesizer and looking at the it was the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra.
Wow. Hired.
And it was amazing. We had 25-piece orchestra. And he says, if I'm doing this, I'm going all the way. And I'm really proud of what we got. And we got into the Tribeca, so it's great.
But it's tons of visual effects.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I would say 96% of the film is visual effects.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so green screening.
I have to ask you that because I don't know if you've done this, Jim, if you've had an experience working and acting against green screen.
Right.
How tough is that?
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy because it's like, Bobby was great, but I've had other experiences in green screen where they'll go, okay, now look at the door. And I'm like, where's the door?
Yeah.
It's just a big, okay, now look up to the freezer. So you're looking up to the freezer, and it's like, no, it's 50 feet high. Okay, let me look at it. And what Bobby did is he made a previs. He almost made an animation of the feature of exactly what we had. So we had the dynamics of the whole idea of it, but it was definitely, it's definitely tough because you're really, really doing it against nothing. There's a few things that we put into some publicity stuff where you see that, the shots are being done with just a green screen and this emotionality that we're supposed to do.
So wait, you're not even in any type of a structure? The ship is just basically...
It's just like, there's the ship. Now it's moving. Okay. Like that kind of stuff, yeah.
But you know what it looks like because you've seen the previs and you can tell.
The previs really kind of dropped it in. Even the makeup and the effects of what we were going to be seeing. And that wasn't CG, which was great. We had like real...
Good practical effects.
Amazing practical effects. And
that helped.
Oh, God.
I prefer it so much when they have, like, both.
When they can, though, because there's sometimes, like, a natural, like, when the effects aren't as good. Like, there was a movie called The Mist, which I forget. It was a Stephen King story. Frank Darabont, or I forget how to say his last name.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
Darabont, sorry. He's a very good director. But the some of the effects that were, like...
Thomas was in there, right? I forget.
I honestly don't remember. Mm-hmm. But I remember it was about these creatures... in this mist, and one of the creatures' arms, I was like, oh, they could CGI.
Yeah, it takes you right out. And that's, I was tripping out, like, okay, yeah, I'm happy that I got the gig, and it seems extremely ambitious, but you just kind of like shake your head of going, if it's that thing where people are giggling where they're not supposed to be giggling because the CG isn't that great. But we got really lucky, and we got really passionate people a part of the project.
Well, CG has to be good, but there's nothing worse than a bad
practical effect.
Practical effect is like, oh. Oh, you could have just
look,
done
man.
A
I did Wishmaster 4. That should tell you
what
right
was that?
There.
Wishmaster 4.
Wishmaster 4, which is basically they didn't have enough money for the demon in the movie to be in at night. So they
like
would
a Halloween
light it.
Mask.
Well, it was like the costume, the whole outfit was great, but it was we didn't have enough money for lights. So he would come out during the day, and it's just a rubber suit. Like,
wait, there's no money for lights?
No money, so we couldn't shoot at night. So we had a bar scene, and I'm inside the bar, and I'm the bouncer. I'm like, all right, let's take this outside. And it's a dude that turns into this beast. So we go outside. It's bright daylight. He turns into this thing, and we're like, this is just a guy in a rubber suit. And then they had to... he grabs me by the hand. He tossed me into one of those big blue garbage bins. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on a wire... And there's eight guys just trying to lift me to get me into this bin.
Yeah.
And this is what happened every time. I would go over and my legs would hit because my eyes are closed. And I go over, my legs would hit, my shins would hit this bin.
Ah. Oh, bing, man, that
okay,
hurts.
Okay, let's go again. Bing.
Yeah.
And the take that they use is when I opened the eye that was away from camera. And I just kind of went, neek, I just lifted my legs right at the last second and dropped in.
Wishmaster right, 4. I want to see this.
It's classic.
Do you need to see the first three?
Definitely not. Definitely not.
Well, it's so funny also coming from like Planet of the Apes, which obviously has a budget and is super realistic looking. Right. You know, that's amazing that you kind of like run the gamut. It's
yeah.
Wait, was Wishmaster 4 after Planet of the Apes?
No, God.
Oh, all right.
No, God, no. No, that was like one of the first things I did.
It's a good time for shorts, though, because I don't know if you guys have watched Death, Love, and Robots.
No.
It's on Netflix. You especially because you just did this film, you have to watch it. They're like 12-minute mini movies. Some are animated. Well, most are animated, but some have practical effects too.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, I wish that they do another one because they're really short stories. They're very abstract. The animation is amazing.
That's great.
And it's all relative sci-fi, like the end of the earth, what would happen.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And quick little pops. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You love doing science fiction and stuff like that. That's kind of your specialty.
Man, I don't know if I love it. It's just, it knocks on my door quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I just have a blast. I mean, the thing that I'm doing with Jason, and I can't really talk about right now, but it's 11.
Are you in Game of Thrones?
No. No, I wish. Jeez. But yeah, this is like 11 million an episode.
Okay.
And it's going to be quite massive.
Do we know what network? Can you say what network?
Yeah, it's on Apple's new platform.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Apple is spending a lot. Yeah. 11 million. That, you know, it's funny. Even HBO, I think that's what doomed Rome is because they said it was 5 million an episode. And I think Game of Thrones was 15 million an episode.
Yeah, it was 14 or 15. But, you know, it's like Altered Carbon was, I think, 8 or 9 mm-hmm. million episode. And it's these streaming, like Netflix and Hulu, Amazon, they're taking it to another level. They're looking at things in a, you know, I remember back in the day where, you know, a movie star would never do TV. That's like going down.
Sure.
And now it's a completely different ball game. And there's some amazing work being done.
Well, some of the writing is better than it's obviously better than network because you have freedom. And a lot of it's better than film, some of the writing in some of these, you know, there's so many channels. It's not like you have three regular cheesy networks to choose from.
Right, right.
You know, the praise that like Breaking Bad got.
Oh, that show.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And plus, they're paying a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, the Netflix gave Scorsese $100 million to do The Irishman. And again, that's it's probably going to be in a theater just to get considered for awards.
Oh, right. The Irishman. That's right.
But I mean, a lot of these networks, you know, Sandler's last couple of films, I think, have all been for Netflix. So a lot of these streaming services and TV, they're just paying so much
money.
They
are, but sometimes it screws up with the content because they just want to get it out.
Yeah.
So the content isn't that great. And then you get stuff like Breaking Bad where it was originated before they were going, oh, we got Netflix, let's just get something out. That thing was built. And that's where I think you get really fortunate where it's mostly passion projects that get the things that we see and revere. You know?
I have a hard time watching like TV where I got to watch every week now.
Yeah,
like,
right?
Fuck, I just want to zip through it.
Yeah, I just
want to
binge it and get out.
Yeah, Game of Thrones is torture that way.
I know, it is.
Hey, we should do picks too, by the way. What time is Mike Perry calling?
Yeah, we got Mike Perry in like 10 minutes, so we can start doing our picks.
Do I have time to pee?
Sure, okay. Take a break.
Yeah, I have to pee quickly.
Yeah.
What up, everybody? This is CJ McCollum from the Portland Trailblazers. And here's a little taste of what we talked about on this week's Pull Up podcast. Very special mini post-Game 7 episode of Pull Up. An epic Game 7 in Denver.
37 points, back-to-back, essentially closeout buckets. Why were you so successful last night?
I think it just really came down to my demeanor and mindset. Empty the clip, leave nothing out there. I wanted to say I did everything in my power, and I left all my bullets out there on the court and didn't bring anything home.
How do you shift to a completely new animal, an absolute monster in the Warriors?
In the playoffs, it just comes down to X's and O's and execution more so than anything else. The Warriors aren't going to run a lot of plays. They're going to run a lot of misdirection out of timeouts and late clock situations, but most of it's going to be mid pick and roll. It's going to be pin downs and flares and things of that nature for Clay and Steph in a lot of transition. So you have to guard the 3-point line, get back in transition, and make it as difficult as possible on them. Don't forget to
pull up.
Subscribe and listen every week on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows.
After a stressful game, it's only natural to need some well-deserved rest. Upgrade your current sleep situation because Mattress Firm is offering the best bed deal of the year. Get a king bed for a queen price or a queen bed for a twin price for savings of up to $700. Plus, take home a free adjustable base up to a $699 value. That's $699 for free. You'll only find these deals during Mattress Firm's Memorial Day sale. So don't miss your chance to start sleeping like a pro. Shop now at mattressfirm.com/sale. There's nothing worse than being uncomfortable in bed. It's horrible. You're not rested the next day. You suck at work. Mattress Firm's Memorial Day sale is offering the best bed deal of the year. Save up to $700 when you get a king bed for a queen price or a queen bed for a twin price. Plus, take home a free adjustable base that's up to a $699 value. Free. Visit mattressfirm.com/sale for more details. Well, we are back. We took a quick break, and boy, is Phoenix talking shit. Yep. It's nice to be back.
Yep.
We have Mike Perry in just a few minutes. I love Mike Perry. He's fun to watch. Lost 3 out of 4 fights, though, so I mean, I want to see what he's done.
He's fun to watch. He's fun to talk to.
Let's find out why and what would possess a person to put a tattoo over their eyebrow.
Yeah.
Because that just says, I'm not getting a regular job ever. That's really what that says.
Hey, we didn't do our picks, by the way.
No, we didn't. Should,
let's start them, even if we can't finish them.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I'm typically, I have very, did Matt call in with his?
No, he's out shooting with Dana, like we said. So I'm going to get his picks before the event happens on Saturday night. So he'll be locked in. He'll text them to me.
All right. The first fight is a lightweight fight. Roosevelt Roberts against Thomas Gifford is making his UFC debut. What did Roberts do in his last couple of fights and Gifford as well?
Sure. So Roosevelt is undefeated. Roosevelt. He's 7-0. Roosevelt Roberts. He is coming off a standing guillotine choke in the first round against Daryl Horcher. That was his UFC debut. Before that, another a rear naked choke in the Contender Series. And I can pull up Thomas Gifford. But he's 17-7. This is his UFC debut. Hold on. Let me just see what he did in his last fight. I think he's won a bunch in a row. Yeah. His last one was a split decision win over Chris Brown, who I'm not familiar with, and then a guillotine the fight before that against Trey Ogden.
You know, it's tough to pick because, again, first fight, how does he do? He's got more experience, 17-7.
Right.
But how does he do first fight? You know, a lot of guys are great, and a lot of guys just have that crazy dump. You know, they see how good someone in the UFC is, and like, oh, fuck.
100%. Well, and Roosevelt Roberts has a bit of a, you know, there's a little hype behind him after coming off the Contender Series or whatever. So, like, it gives you an idea of how the UFC feels.
Well, Roberts has a photo on the UFC's website, and Gifford does not.
He does not, right. So,
So, I'm going to go with Roberts based off of absolutely no reasoning other than I can see his face.
But you also figure that they
and
would
and Thomas Gifford is a shadow demon.
Yeah, he's one of the shadow people Art Bell used to talk about. Why can't they get a picture of the guy for the website?
I don't know.
You've announced the fight. It's not like he just showed up.
You know what it is? Because I think they do it. I think they take the pictures when they come in for fight week. So if they put up on the website before fight week.
It's
like
the same lighting. So they don't want to have you know, from his iPhone and everyone else is professional.
Right. I mean, look, they can make it look like Alex is in a spaceship and a fucking ape. They can make it look like he's in the same room.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so I'm going to take Roberts by a second round submission.
All right. I'm going to take Roosevelt by decision. I like the 17-7. I mean, that's a lot of fights. I don't think he's just going to get
fights,
stopped, but go by decision.
Okay.
Roosevelt by decision.
All right.
How about you, Alex?
Guillotine Roosevelt.
Oh, all right.
There we go.
3 in a row.
This fight was supposed to happen, I guess, a couple of months ago. This is an awesome fight. John Lineker and Corey Sandhagen.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to this one.
Man, John can throw.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
From his hip.
What was the last fight? Last two fights for both.
Lineker is coming off of a knockout of Brian Kelleher in his last fight, and then he had a decision win over Chito Vera. And then Corey Sandhagen is on a 5-fight win streak. He's coming off of an armbar win over Mario Bautista in his last fight.
I see.
And before that, it was actually the Yuri Alcantara fight where it looked like he was dead in the water.
That's
it looked like he was going to get submitted, got out of it, and ended up winning that fight.
I say Sandhagen by second round.
Well,
submission.
You know what? I got to interrupt you guys. We got Mike Perry.
Let's do it.
Mike Perry's on the phone.
We'll finish our picks after. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. What's up?
Good, buddy. You're talking to Jim, to Phoenix Carnevale, and to Alex Ponovic. Matt is out shooting with Dana today, so welcome to the show.
All right. What's up, man? Hey, what show were we watching? We were watching Power, and you're a drug-dealing priest.
Yes.
That's a great show, man.
Thank you. Yeah, it is really good, man. Yeah, that was a very odd role.
I thought you died.
What's that?
Didn't you die?
I did. Yeah, they. It was the season finale of season 4, and I'm like, I might make it through this season? And I'm like, every week I would ask, are they going to kill me? And they would always go, no. And then they told me, like, yeah, you're getting it this
week.
Getting The producer called me. She goes, listen, give us a call. And I'm like, oh, this is the year about to be killed.
Yep.
But it was really a fun, man. Yeah, yeah, it's amazing how many people watch that show. I'll be out and people will be in cabs and yell stuff. That was a really popular show. So thanks, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great show. It entertained us for a little while. I was mad when I found out that was sixth season was the last one.
Oh, are they actually done with it?
No idea.
No, I don't know if they're done. I'm just saying that, what's his name's girl, the police officer girl on the show, got shot right at the end, the last episode, and then I thought we were about to watch more episodes, and my girl was like, nope, that was the last one.
Oh.
I was like, oh, man, they leave you in suspense.
Well, you didn't leave me in suspense. Now I know what happens at the end of that season.
Oh, man. Oh,
spoiler alert.
Do you binge watch everything?
Spoiler alert, yeah.
We were just talking about that. I can't watch things from week to week anymore. If there's a choice, I'd rather let it all play out, avoid spoilers, and then just watch the whole thing back to back.
So are you not watching Game of Thrones right now? Because memes will give it away.
Exactly.
Yes, I did, actually. I watched Game of Thrones on HBO when it showed, and it's the first time in a couple of years I've actually watched a live week-to-week show. Normally I watch it on demand, but Game of Thrones, yeah. Are you watching?
Oh, yeah, bro. It's like, I don't know. That show is like waiting for it at the end of every week. Like, I've been waiting for this fight to get here, and I'm like, oh man, the day after the fight, we can watch Game of Thrones.
So true.
So you kind of tell yourself that, all right, is that something you'll do when you have to fight? Kind of not look beyond the fight, but go like, okay, a fight is the event this week, but then I have that. Like, you make it a part of your life, so it's not so overwhelming.
You know, that might be something that I do without thinking about it, because I can't think of another thing that I've done. You know, I mean, you do that with weigh-ins. You're like, all right, Friday morning, I make it, and then I get to fucking eat, yo. So, you know, I do that with weigh-ins, but with the fight, I can't really think of anything that I go do after. You know, I haven't had a alcoholic drink in 4 months, so this time I'm also like, I think I might have a celebratory drink when I win on Saturday.
Your girlfriend looks like she's an incredible cook because she's always handing you plates of deliciousness. And I'm Latina, and I was like, did she just make rice and beans? And I was hungry after looking at your Instagram. So how are you cutting weight with a good chef in the house?
Yeah, I mean, looks can be deceiving. I need the salt shaker with me in those videos. No, I'm just playing. I'm just playing. I mean, it's hard, yo. I'm worried about it every day. Right now, I'm like, oh, is it like last time was I this high? Last time, oh my God, am I going to make it? I don't know. Some people still got 22 pounds, and I'm like, if they can do 20, I can do 10 or 12. So, you know, but then I get in the sauna or something, and I turn bitch real quick.
Well, I've never had to cut weight like that, and I was watching something on Cyborg where they were showing the process she has to go through. I think it was to get down to 140 at one point. And I mean, she was weeping and crying and going, like, and
it's
literally
painful.
Having a mental breakdown. Are your weight cuts that bad for you? Like, is it a point where you go, like, I might have to go up, or is it still kind of manageable for you?
No, yeah, I don't let it get there, because I think a lot of people do it really wrong. I used to work with a lot of boxers who, and boxing coaches who were like, it ain't cut weight, it's on weight. And, you know, you get low very early and you start to get your body used to being at that weight. And these guys do that so they can put back on, what, 20 pounds sometimes. And you know, I just put on like, you know, 10 or 12 now, sometimes 8. You know, I don't put that much back on. I like to be mobile. I like to be able to move well. I like my body to feel good. I try to get it down, but like I said, you know, I keep that in the back of my head. Like, if some people are doing 20, I can push it, and I can definitely do the 12 or whatever I got left. And I, you know, the fact that I'd have to pay 20-30% of my purse kind of, I think, helps too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And struggling with it, I definitely woke up this morning, and, or I think I was like, I don't know if I was dreaming about praying to God, like, yo, I need help with my weight cut. And then all of a sudden I woke up at 5 a.m. and was like, I'm feeling energetic this morning. I'm about to go for a run right now. That might help. So I woke up early this morning. I ran, and I've been going through my day doing media stuff and drinking my water and getting the sodium out. So it's just a process, man. And I think I've only missed weight. Never in the UFC. I've never missed weight in the UFC. So that's what we'll stick with, is that I'm a professional. I show up on weight. I do what I got to do. I get this money.
Yeah, and you're maintaining your power, too. I mean, everybody knows that you're a power puncher. You got them hands. So it definitely helps not to feel like crap going into fight week.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
How's your mentality, too, Mike? How are you? Because you lost a couple of fights. Have you learned anything, like, especially from the Cowboy loss, which was on the ground? I mean, a couple of tough decisions, you know, to Max Griffin and Ponzinibbio. Cerrone was on the ground, and you know what Oliveira is probably going to want to do. At least you know what he's
absolutely
probably going to be thinking. So what have you kind of done? I mean, again, we talked before Tyron Woodley against Damian Maia. Just because a guy wants to take you down does not mean he's going to be able to.
Absolutely. You know, I kind of – just my mind is in a much better place now than it was when it was – my fight was so dramatic with Cowboy. Mm. It was like – it was Jackson Wink versus Cowboy, and
yeah,
and well, or actually, let me rephrase that. It was Mike Perry versus Cowboy, but had I, you know, been thinking about, oh, if I win, I'm thinking people are gonna be like, oh, it was Jackson Wink versus Cowboy. It was
right.
Jackson Wink who won that fight. It wasn't Mike Perry, and I was like, deep down inside, I kind of kept telling myself these negative things, like, oh, you know, I don't know if I even really want to win. I don't want people to take the credit from me after all these years, all this shit I've done. I just went to Jackson Wink because I wanted to go train and hang out with John Jones because I was a big fan of him, and he's my favorite fighter, and I was impressed with what he's been able to do. So, and then it turned into this big thing, and then I was like, just deep down, it wasn't me. It didn't feel like me. So...
yeah, it's like you're like hanging out with parents that are going through a divorce. Like, that's right. the gym politics, very uncomfortable.
Shit, I don't even know what hanging out with parents going through a divorce feels like. But, I mean, yeah, it was weird. And there was so many things I was telling myself. Even right before I walked out, I felt like you're walking out to face defeat. And you have to do it. You have to face defeat no matter what you do. And then it's the craziest shit. The next day you wake up and it's snow everywhere. When all the whole time I was in Denver, nothing. It was muddy and it was like, ugh. And it was glim. And then all of a sudden it was this big platinum day. And I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
What's this all about? And I, you know, I like to get spiritual and think crazy stuff. And my mom was like, oh, it wasn't your time yet. And I'm like, you know, I have what it takes to beat that guy. And it wasn't the right time. It wasn't my time. But now that I'm back where with the team that I started with, that I've always had the love to do this shit with, I just feel free. And I feel like my old self again. I feel aggressive and strong and powerful, and I feel capable, and like it's sprawl and brawl has been the game plan for this. When I came into the UFC, it was sprawl and brawl, and then I got away from that, and then I brought it back for this camp.
Your passion,
a lot more jiu-jitsu. In order to practice sprawling and brawling, I had to grapple a lot more.
Okay,
you know, I was going to ask you that because we just had Greg Hardy on the phone. And you had won so many fights in a row, knockout, TKO, that after a while, it probably becomes a little harder to make yourself train on the ground when you're having such incredible success standing up.
And then you get in the high levels like this, and you see guys who are able to take it, and they can take the hardest shot you can throw, and you got to throw, you know, four or five more behind it. And then you got to trip them and hit them on the ground too. Like, you know, the levels change and you start to see new things. And it's crazy that all the new things I've learned just kind of told me to go back to the mentality you had when you were a young savage kid.
So it's same mentality but new tools, right? Like
absolutely new knowledge.
It seems like your passion is even that much more than it was before. It seems like because you've kind of gone through all of the trials and tribulations of it, and now you're remembering what it was like in the beginning, which is even more invigorating.
Yeah, that went away a lot too. That was a scary thing, just kind of like not wanting to give a fuck about winning or training or, and then I tried to find ways to like strike fear into myself so that I could go work hard 3 times a day. And then injuries happened, like little bumps and bruises that can really set you back.
Yeah.
And we have them all the time. You're never 100% when you step in the ring if you trained hard enough, but so, I've been through it, and I'm becoming somewhat of a veteran, and I've been watching the veterans win these fights lately, and you'll see a fight with, like, a new up-and-comer and a vet, and then the first round is like, oh, man, the up-and-comer was doing this work, and then you see the second round, and it switched completely, and the veteran noticed everything they did wrong in the first, right. And they dialed in, and they made the changes that they needed to make. So, I'm really proud of the knowledge that I've gained. I don't care if they came with L's or what. It's just lessons, learning, and knowledge, and I'm not going to sit here and sound whack either. Like, oh, I saw this meme. I think it was like the girl from The Simpsons, Lisa Simpson. And she's like freaking out on the ground, holding her knees. And it's like, there are no losses, only lessons. There are no losses, only lessons. And she's like freaking out over it. But it really is true. It really is.
Yeah. And the it's like you said about on that level, guys. I mean, they know what to do. They know how to adjust. And when you're playing high level baseball, no matter how fast you throw a fastball, you're not going to constantly get guys out with a fastball because they're all capable of hitting it. You got to be able to throw a curve or a slider, and that's why you're smart to be concentrating on the ground as well.
And it's that geography too, right? Like you're understanding the geography of the ring, of the octagon, and you're not and the timing of the punches. You're not wasting punches as you did when you were younger. So it's that cagey veteran mentality, which is really interesting. Mm.
Being more patient and not letting, there are guys who can run well in there, and there are guys who grab well in there. And I think that right now the game plan is to stop the takedown, and if they run, let them. And I've been stuck on that Bruce Lee saying. I don't say it exactly correct, but he said something about, when the time is right, it will land all on its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, Mike, you're only 27, too. You are becoming a veteran, but you're really still a really young guy. So you have a lot of fights left in you. You have plenty of time to get where you want to go.
I do not hit. It hits all by itself.
Ooh.
My bad Bruce Lee accent.
I love that.
But, it sounds like, honestly, Mike, it sounds like your fight IQ is just increasing. So can you break down Oliveira for us and how you beat him? Without giving too much away, obviously.
No, it don't matter. Right hand, right kick, right front kick, push you up against the cage, lean on you, try to drag you down to the ground, great ground and pound, long reach, all the way out, all the way in. Technically, both of us want that. And, like I said, stop the takedown, stop it again if I have to, break the will there. And when it's time, it will hit all by itself.
Nice.
Yeah, if you can punish him coming in as he's shooting for takedowns, if you can punish him a couple of times, maybe that will discourage him from making too many
attempts. Absolutely. You have to punish him. I have to be last. You got to try to be first and last. If he touches me, I got to touch him right back with 2 or 3. If, Just if he does something that he wants to do, like shoot that takedown, I can't just stop him. I got to make them pay. You're right about that for sure.
Mike, I love that you bring a lot of like old school boxing mentality into it too, because not just being first but being last is something that my boxing coach used to say all the time. Is that where you got that?
Shit, I don't know. That's more of a recent thing. for me, it was guys I was working with, Muay Thai.
Yeah.
You know, we started working triggers. If off of the, actually, that was, I was working with Frank the Tank on that one because we figured Cowboy would throw some kicks. But the problem is guys ain't throwing offense, which makes them hard to counter.
Right. If
you can't really counter a guy because they're not open if they're not throwing.
Right.
And these guys are fighting me. They're not throwing. They're grabbing me and hugging me, or they're running away. So if I stop the grabbing and the hugging, and if I'm not the one who goes for the damn takedown, or if I do get the takedown, I just got to be patient there and hold my position. I can't, like, I took Cowboy down in the side control. My coach in Florida's like, oh, that's a 5-point takedown, bro. And then I'll go for the key lock. He's like, oh, man, why'd you go for the damn Americana?
Yeah.
What are you doing? And then I got out of it, and I stayed in his guard, but my weight was up high. So, and then he's like, you know this, when you they go for the armbar, you don't fucking lift them up. And, you know, when I did pick him up, my head, these thoughts ran through my head at a million miles an hour, like, oh, man, if this was concrete and you slammed them, this would be fantastic. And then it was like, oh, but there are rules. You can't spike them a certain way. They have those at fighter meetings before the fights. They tell you you can't, like, put them on their neck a certain way. I was like, okay, this must be high enough. I'm going to try to slam them now. And then my arm popped, and then I spun around, and I was like, oh, I've been in this position a million times, and a guy has never twisted my arm like that.
Wow.
Then he popped my arm 6 more times over the side, and I was like, oh! And that was the fight, you know what I mean? Cowboy was in his gi every day getting it, and I know what that's like. Now I've been with the greatest black belts on the planet, between Rodolfo Rivera, Jacare Souza, Julian Williams, and my day one coach, Julian Williams, gets respect like you have never seen from these amazing black belts. I have never seen him lose a grappling match, a round. He doesn't give any ground to anyone. He is the most amazing grappler I have ever seen. And no matter if you're competing every day, every week, grappling all the time, it doesn't matter. He may not compete as much as others, but his mind is so clear, so clean. He's untouchable.
Well, you sound ready. And before we let you go, too, you, at one point you were single, and now you're engaged. Congratulations.
Yeah, nice work.
Yeah, man, we've engaged. It's just, we married. Man. That's it. I just got to sign a paper. I'm trying to hurry up and get those papers, but, we, you know, she lying, talking about, you know, she don't want to do a big wedding, but she's a little rich girl, so she's going to want.
You think she wants a big
nice
wedding?
Little party.
Yeah, you can do
she's
it.
She's
going to
do
fun.
A nice little party.
We just want the sure. dress. We just want to make sure the dress is That's, banging yeah. and it's important to us.
And she wants the right person to marry us. Like, she's talking about getting one of my old boxing coaches, his credentials to be the one who marries us.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
I like that. Mike, honestly, you're so like, I really want you to recount every part of your day. Like, yeah, you're a really yeah. good storyteller.
I can listen to you all day, man.
And
you're
Discovery
awesome.
Channel should hire you to talk about, like, gorillas in the woods or something. Because you're amazing.
But by the way, be careful.
Maybe I'll be commentating soon right next to Paul Felder.
That you should.
There you go.
It is an easier Let's way go. Of life. It's an easier way of life, commentating. I don't know what motivates guys like Felder and Cormier to fight at all when they're so good at commentating. Right. Why would you want to fight anymore?
Because you love competing.
Well, I mean, when you're sitting there watching those fights like that all the time, you're getting that energy from yeah. the arena all the time.
Wow.
And you actually get the opportunity to get in there and put on a show for people, I can see why they would want to still fight.
I guess so. What would dissuade me is the idea of being hit. So I guess that's why I don't want to. Hey, man, we love watching you. I know Matt loves you, too. So good luck, man. We're looking forward to you against Cowboy Oliveira. I mean, you just do not take easy fights, and you're not an easy fight for anybody you get in with. So good luck this Saturday, buddy, okay?
Good luck, brother.
I appreciate you guys, man. Be easy.
All right, later, take care, Mike. Be good.
Oh my God, I love that dude.
Yeah, he's great.
Me too.
He's
too. A really
nice he's one guy. Of the best personalities in the sport.
Oh my
yeah.
God, he's yeah. so good.
The clip
you remember that? Remember that? There's that clip of his, the spa.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, it's so great.
Oh, oh my God, we just
it was
British,
with Darren Till.
Darren Till, yeah.
Yeah, Darren Till. I thought you wanted to go to a spa. No, I want a spa, man. That was awesome.
So yeah, he has been training with Jacques Ray, so hopefully that helps him on the ground.
Yeah,
because you know what Oliveira is going to want to do.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely going to want to drag him down. But the thing is, I really liked, like, obviously his aggression is one thing, but I remember him using really nice small angles mm-hmm. when he was moving his way in. And that was really attractive to me. That was something that I think really elevated his game. And I'm hoping to see that again.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the elbow knockout of Jake Ellenberger, yeah. It's like that's, you know.
Yeah,
very high level.
And if you really see that, he does a tiny little angle, and yep. then he lands it perfectly. Yeah, it's great.
I'm going to take Lineker by decision, by the way.
You're taking John Lineker yep. by decision. All right. I mean, that's going to be a wild fight if it goes to decision. All right. I actually, I'm going to take Corey Sandhagen by first round.
Wow.
Knockout.
Wow.
Knockout.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think he's going to use his range. Yeah, he's going to keep everything at distance, and he's going to catch him eventually.
Okay.
Wow.
We'll see.
And what has Teixeira done?
Well, what do we got here? Phoenix, I said
Sandhagen, but yeah. I didn't predict a round.
Oh, okay.
I think sub. I just think he's really good. Maybe second round sub.
Sure.
As an ex-boxer, I'm going
Lineker.
John. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's hard to go against him.
Yeah, I think it's going to go in the second.
All right.
And let's see. We got Glover is fighting Ewan
Kutalaba. This was also supposed to happen, I think, a little while back. I think Glover ended up taking or whatever. But this was supposed to happen a little while back, so now they put it back together here.
And what have they both done?
Glover is coming off so Carl Roberson stepped in for Ewan Kutalaba. I believe he got injured or whatever. So Glover's coming off a submission arm triangle
in Brooklyn,
choke win over
right?
Carl Roberson. Yes,
that was Brooklyn?
January 19th in Brooklyn. And Ewan is coming off a knockout of Gajimurad Antigulov in his last fight.
What's
but that was
record?
July 2018. He's 14-3 and one no contest, Ewan Kutalaba.
How many knockouts?
Glover.
Let's see if they have it. He has 11 of his 14 wins are by knockout.
Mm. Yeah, he's powerful.
Yeah, he's really powerful. I mean, there's a fantastic matchup, and Glover's 28-7 overall. Right.
That's why John Jones again is so impressive, because Glover's good with the uppercuts on the inside, right. And John did that to him.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, that's John Jones is such a freak. Yeah. He does whatever he thinks the other person is going to be better
that
at. He
that does shoulder crank that he did against the cage when he was just like tossing around like a rag doll, and he's a big, strong dude.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. I
don't know on this one, Jim. You go.
I don't know.
What is it? Ion? Ion?
It's Ewan. Ewan.
Sounds like a Star Wars name.
Right? Yeah. I think I don't know. Glover's been a little chinny.
Mm-hmm.
I think he gets caught a little bit more now after that big knockout early. I'm gonna go Ewan.
Yep.
What?
Two knockout.
You know what? I'll go with the same thing.
I actually had the same thing written down. I'm going to get, and I love Glover.
Do
I mean,
you really?
He can definitely win that fight, but I have Ewan Kutalaba by second round knockout. Yeah.
So I'm just going to just throw an oddball thing there out there. Go. Say okay. Glover by second round sub.
All right. Wow. Yeah. Why not? I mean, that probably he has an advantage there, I would say.
Yeah.
You know,
now this next one.
What, you said second round sub, Jimmy?
I said second round sub.
You said second round knockout. Sorry.
Now, what has Oliveira done in his last couple?
Cowboy Oliveira is coming off of a loss to
Gunnar, right?
Gunnar Nelson in the last one, which arguably is the most bloody fight I've ever seen.
Yeah,
that was great. He like he had 36 stitches after that, and it was insane. It was the most blood I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was really crazy.
It was in such a spot that it just would not stop bleeding.
Yeah. So that was his last fight. That was a loss. But then prior to that, he guillotined Carlos Condit, and then he knocked out Carlo Pedersoli in the fight before
that
the
Condit
loss.
Guillotine was vicious.
Yeah. And then Perry, of course, is coming off the loss to Cowboy in his last fight.
Yeah, I'm after just talking to him, Perry all day.
Yeah,
like I can't go against Perry. Man.
I have a feeling Mike Perry's going to throw some kicks.
It's so funny. I had Oliveira by second round sub,
but
and I crossed it out. And I wrote Perry by second round knockout. So that's what I'm taking. Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's really hard because I love Perry.
Yeah,
but Oliveira is so dangerous on the ground.
He is a real veteran, just game.
And I think he knows how to get you where he wants to get. Wherever he wants the fight to go, I think he is. He's been around long enough to make that happen.
Well, what's interesting, I think Mike's advantage is always, he's not a counter fighter. He goes in. So he's got to, I guess, really determine that geography of how far does he go in when the shot comes that he can sprawl. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. He doesn't want to overcommit.
Yeah.
I think Perry's going to.
I say Mike Perry by unanimous decision.
That's okay. Nice. All
right. I feel like he'll learn. He's going to do what he says he's going to do, which is control, you know, clenching up, controlling.
Not get overzealous.
Yeah. I hope so. It'll be interesting to see him win.
He sounded so passionate. I think he's on his game, man. I'm going with him. He sounds so great.
And he's at home in Florida, trained with Jacare. Jacare's fighter. Right. It's like he's pumped for this.
He has a tremendous power advantage. I still have to go with Oliveira.
Okay.
Second round sub, just because I think he's so good on the ground. Mm-hmm. I just think that's a really, really. It's a tough fight.
Yeah, and he's a wild striker too. That's the thing. Like Oliveira's not going to be afraid to engage that way.
Yeah, he can knock
because
you out too.
He can grab anything.
But standing up, I give an advantage to Perry.
No, 100%.
I mean, over most people. Perry.
It's just that length, right? That Oliveira's length. It could be if Perry can get inside of the length, that would be that's a different story. But if Alex determines that geography. Could be tough.
I would actually like to see. There's times where I like to be wrong. I like Mike, so I would love to see Mike win this fight.
Yep. Co-main event. We talked to him earlier. Greg Hardy and Dmitry Smolyakov.
What's Smolyakov's record?
He is 9-2 overall. He won his last fight outside of the UFC. It was a submission, a Kimura victory. Before that, he had two fights in the UFC. He lost both of them to Luis Henrique, a submission, and he got knocked out by Cyril Asker. And then he came out of the UFC, and now he's back.
Who knocked Cyril Asker out really badly?
Let me pull that up. It's a great question. I know what you're talking about.
You know the fight I'm talking about, too.
Tai Tuivasa.
Right. Right. I remember that.
Hardy, I have to take Hardy in this one.
Yep.
I'm going to take Hardy by a first-round knockout.
Yeah. That's what I have. I mean, it just makes sense. Yeah. I obviously, he's working on other parts of his game, but... He's going to try to knock the guy out.
But on the ground, if it goes to the ground, I think Dimitri's going to beat him.
Yeah. Yes, he is a way more rounded.
You can't train. Like, you can't pack 10 years of ground fighting.
You're not cramming jiu-jitsu.
Right.
You can't cram jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, or wrestling. Anything on the ground, you just can't.
Right.
Yeah. You can understand something conceptually, but if your muscle memory doesn't have it for jiu-jitsu, especially angling your hips out.
Especially when your cardio goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, your brain's not going to be on.
You're a big dude, you hit really hard. A big dude, even not a trained fighter, can always land a punch.
Right.
There's no way a guy who's just limber is going to get on the ground and fucking tap somebody who knows jiu-jitsu.
Right. What do you think? What are you going?
I'm going Greg Hardy by knockout. First round. Well, let's say first round, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like...
He might pace himself and then wind up getting the knockout in the second. So let me say that. Let me say second round knockout.
Okay. I really want to see... I would love to be wrong, but I feel like he's going to do the exact same thing and just come out gunning. And then start... If he doesn't get him out... If he knocks him out, he knocks him out. If he doesn't get him out of there, it's going to be the same fight. So
without the DQ,
hopefully. So,
all right,
yeah,
No, that's reasonable. I agree. I mean, I think that is his style, it's gonna be his style for as long as he fights, all right. Main event, this is such an interesting matchup. Jack Hermanson stepping in to fight Jacare Sosa.
Hermanson looked so good this last fight,
yeah.
He did.
He looked so. Who did he might get my memories going?
He submitted a Henzo Gracie black belt, David Branch.
That's right. Crazy.
Yeah. Which everyone thought Branch was going to submit him.
Yeah. Because Branch has great jiu-jitsu and judo background, and it was. I was shocked actually.
Yeah.
I don't see him submitting Jacare.
No.
Yeah. No. Probably not. Right. I mean, I have Jacare by third round submission. I think that's. Where the advantages? I mean, although Hermanson is a great grappler, he does a lot of these grappling tournaments and whatever, has power. It's very interesting. But coming in on short notice, I think Jacare is going to...
Then again, he didn't do much. Like, he didn't suffer any damage in his last fight.
Not at all.
So I'm going to say Jacare by second round knockout.
Mm. All right.
Jacare by decision.
I was going to do the same thing, Jacare decision.
Yeah, Jacare this fight, not that it doesn't mean anything to Hermansson, but this fight really matters to Jacare. Like, yeah. any loss is going to push him farther away from right. the title shot. He needs this fight to get himself back.
Yeah, and I think it was promised to him, right? If I
Oh, I'm not sure about that. But
he said it in an interview, but who knows?
Right.
Well, Rockhold is out, and Yoel is hurt, right?
Yeah, Yoel pulled out of this fight due to illness. I think I read somewhere that he has pneumonia. Or he
yeah.
got
oh,
yeah.
really? So,
okay. Yeah.
That's a fight I would love to see.
Now, what's Rock? Why is Rockhold out?
Because he went up.
Light heavyweight.
Yeah.
Oh, he's out. That's a light heavyweight. Okay, got it.
He's fighting Anthony Smith.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
No. They were bitching. Was he fighting?
Yeah, yeah. They were going back and forth.
Oh, it's not set?
No.
Oh, right. They were jawing back and forth.
Yeah, Anthony's fighting Gustafsson on June
1st. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Rockhold is fighting Jan Blachowicz at the July 6th card.
That's right.
I wonder where that fight will wind up.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But so just by the way, also on this card, Ben Saunders is fighting. Andre Arlovsky is fighting. Oh, Carlos Sparza. Gilbert Burns. Jim Miller's on this. Angela Hill.
It's a great card.
It's a really, really
great
card.
By the way, if Jacare wins, you could be right. Because again, with Romero sick, I don't know how long he's at. And Rockhold not in the picture. And Adesanya is the interim champion.
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, it's never going to hurt Jacare to get this win. I mean, it puts him in certainly very close to contention.
And depending how he wins, right? If he wins, like, in sensational fashion, that'll really shoot him right up.
How is Gastelum number five? Am I crazy? How the fuck did that happen? He literally just lost a tremendous fight to Israel Adesanya. How is he number five?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, I guess I don't know what he was coming into the
How
fight,
do you drop?
But... Well, because he lost.
But I mean, five spots?
Yeah.
There's four guys ahead of him when he fights that well?
Yeah, I don't know. Because I don't know what Izzy was when that fight took place. Like, now he's the number one contender because he's the interim champion. But he might have been, they might have been right next to each other in the rankings. I'm not sure.
All right. Well,
maybe it's how many fights in that particular weight class, and then because Kelvin has changed a few times or whatnot.
Yeah.
All right.
That was a crazy fight, you guys.
Yeah.
One of the best ever.
God, that was such amazing. A great fight.
Loved it.
Getting up. Like in the last, what was it, last 10 seconds, he got up three times?
Yeah.
Oh, so God,
insane. Couldn't finish him.
No, just couldn't put him away.
And I think Israel just showed, like, he's the next level. He went through the test.
Yeah, he did. He dropped it with the first round, and has he been dropped before? That was his first time?
No, not in the UFC. Yeah. He wasn't, yeah. Showed heart in that fifth, showed his champion's heart to win that fight. Yeah.
Totally, it was so great to watch.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you guys very much. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Thank
Thanks,
you to
guys.
Mike Perry, of course, and my memory is going so
Greg
bad.
Hardy.
Mike Perry, Greg Hardy,
yes. Yep.
And Alex and Phoenix, thank you very much.
Can I just give the proper plug for this this weekend? So it's Jacare versus Hermansson this Saturday, April 27th in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. ESPN Plus main card starts at 9 p.m. Eastern. The ESPN prelims are on at 7 p.m., and then the early prelims are on ESPN2 at 5:30 Eastern.
Great. And Alex, one more plug for your film, please.
Yeah, it's premiering Saturday at the I think it's the Apollo. I'm not sure for the screening of The Shipman, and pretty stoked about it being Tribeca and to see you again, man. Every time I love coming. I listen to you guys all the time.
How you do?
So I kind of fangirl, and and so when I get to come over here and kind of chat with you guys, it's pretty awesome.
Anytime, thanks, man.
Thank you, appreciate it.
And how about you, Phoenix?
LFA this Friday night. The future is now. It's the UFC definitely fishes from our pool all the time, so you get to see these athletes right before they get picked up by the UFC. So I'll be there, and then the podcast is in fighting shape, and you know I'll probably be on a diarrhea commercial sometime soon.
Oh, awesome! I keep auditioning and not getting them. You're overdoing it. All right. Well, thank you guys both. This is
Thanks,
great.
Guys.
Later.
All right, now remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, radio.com/UFC Unfiltered, or wherever you get your shows. Not my business.